We're talking about a very, very important topic, and it's an important topic that has massive, I would say, contemporary relevance. It's an issue which is very much discussed by a variety of contemporary rabbanim, and I want to try to frame the issue in the following way, to make it more contemporary from the outset, and then be'ezrat Hashem to be able to tie things together and to learn some wonderful Torah of the Netziv. About, I guess, a year or so ago, Rav Eliezer Melamed, who is one of the most identifiable, recognized, and influential poskim in the Dati Lumi community here in Eretz Yisrael, had a Zoom meeting as part of a conference in which he met with a female Reform rabbi. That set off a massive response to that meeting. Rav Melamed was critiqued by fellow senior Dati Lumi Rabbanim, critiqued by the Sephardi Chief Rabbi of Israel, critiqued by a variety of people. And as a result of that, there were a variety of statements, public letters that came out against Rav Melamed. Now, the initial meeting and the initial statement is in and of itself noteworthy. What is more relevant to us in many ways in learning the Torah of Netziv is not what Rav Melamed initially did even, or the response of an initial letter signed by various rabbanim, but is the descriptions and the defense of Rav Eliezer Melamed, which he published afterwards, followed by a fascinating kuntres put out by Rav Yehoshua Shapira, who is Rashiva, the head of Yeshiva in Ramat Gan. He's an absolute giant and very well-known figure here in the Dati Lumi world. He's very much connected to the world of Torah Chassidus. If you hang out in Binyanei HaUmah surrounding Kislev, Yeshua Shapira, I think even has a very chashuv speaking slot there. It is a big debate existed. That debate, in many ways, so unsurprisingly, in discussing the appropriateness of being able to meet with a female Reform rabbi, so I imagine many of us would intuit, if you don't, they weren't debating about what the Munkacha Rebbe, the Minchas Lazar, held about these topics. It's pretty clear where the Minchas Lazar would have been on this. No one was debating that for a moment. They also were debating what the Chasam Sofer probably would have thought. Meaning, the Chasam Sofer, we spoke about last year, who fought so intensely, Chadash Aser Min HaTorah, he fought so intensely against certain innovations and held a particular very hard line. So if we're going to debate what is appropriate, not appropriate, so unsurprisingly, we are not going to debate in light of the particular view of the Chasam Sofer. There are going to be a couple of people that really matter a lot. And there are going to be a couple of Rabbanim whose viewpoint, whose influence, whose perspective is increasingly valuable. For that Tzibor, so of course Rav Kook and Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook is going to matter a lot. But one of the primary people, one of the primary shitas that gets analyzed is that of the Netziv. What would the Netziv have thought? And the Netziv's view becomes so critical, and it becomes critical for what is nowadays one of the most defining questions, which impacts so many issues here in Eretz Yisrael. It relates to questions, again, about who you meet with and who you work with, but it relates to issues which Rav Melamed, in a very surprising column, where it was open to the fact that maybe we should give Reform Jews a place at the Kotel to daven and to bring and to have their own Sefer Torah, a very sort of innovative idea, at least at first, and I think second glance also, of a variety of intriguing perspectives that are out there. And in many ways, the Machlokas becomes and emerges from Torah of the Netziv. The Netziv would have been radically opposed to this. The Netziv would have said this is all absolutely ridiculous and we must fight against it. Forget the Kotel first. The idea of meeting and granting what appears to be legitimacy and understanding that we should work together and cooperate and highlighting a certain unity, or the Netziv would have said it's the worst idea in the world, that what you did was absolutely terrible, what you did was atrocious. If you want to get really fancy, just to broaden the way the Netziv is used, so in the conservative movement, I couldn't control myself, on the sheet in source number 5, you have like a conservative rabbi arguing that like the Netziv is like one of those people that's like full-blown pluralistic. Like if you were a Netziv person, he seems to imply, you would be great with conservative rabbis leading conservative bar mitzvahs, and you'd be like, that's a lichachila, that's a wonderful thing, because the Netziv was entirely full-blown pluralistic. So I'll give you the punchline now, he wasn't, but I do want to understand the Netziv and what he really held and what he really thought. This is subject to a tshuva that may be the most famous tshuva in all of Shut Meshiv Davar. The tshuva is Chilak Aleph Simen Mem Dalet. that is a world-famous tshuva of the Nativ. It's world-famous. It happens to be for a lot of reasons. Sometimes when Achronim have tshuvas that are very well-known, it's because in one tshuva, they're able to relate to many, many different ideas. And in one tshuva, they're able to highlight discussions which are important for so many different areas. So it relates to, and I'll give you a list of areas that Nativ's tshuva relates to and why it's so important. It relates to whether ideally a Jew is supposed to be separate from this world, focusing on ahava and dveikas, removed from interactions with humanity, or you are supposed to be more involved and more capable of sharing the beauty of Torah to others. That's one thing that the Nativ talks about. The Nativ speaks about the power of Torah, we'll see in a bit, to bring people back, that if people have shifted a bit away from the firm world, if people have distanced themselves in a certain sense, away from where the frum community really is, the power of Torah, the Nativ here has discussions about in a very important and relevant way. The idea of Talmud Torah Shalolishma, the idea of teaching Torah to people that don't learn for the best intentions, and for the Nativ, the power of a Talmud Torah Shalolishma, of a Talmud Torah which is maybe not done for the best of intentions, but nevertheless still has a particular value. But the primary goal of the Nativ, is to respond to an article that was put out in a newspaper or a magazine that had to do with a machlokas taking place in Hungary. And the machlokas there had to do with Jewish communal affiliation. Al Yamin v'al Smol, the Nativ discussion, Yamin v'Smol, is about being right-wing and being left-wing. That is the tshuva of Nativ, not right-wing and left-wing the way that we use right-wing and left-wing, but the way it was used in an article published in a journal called Machzikei Hadas. Machzikei Hadas was put out in Hungary. Hungary, that's where you have the Chasam Sofer, the world of Munkash, a lot of the Maram Shik, the strong opposition to all that is reform, the strong opposition. Reform here, I only mean the reform movement. I mean to certain kinds of new innovations that they were deeply, deeply opposed to. Where exactly the Bima is in Shul, well, last week as being a massive deal, is the Bima in the front, is the Bima in the middle, is the Rav going to darshan, what language is he going to speak in? A lot of these questions become very, very important. And in the journal Machzikei Hadas, so it used to be that in Hungary, you had to, for the government, affiliate with particular religious communities. And this community had a degree of independence, they were going to collect taxes, they were going to function as a community. And in Hungary, they wanted to break off. They wanted to divide the Jewish community into different sections. Those that were keeping Torah and mitzvos the way that they understood you're supposed to keep Torah and mitzvos, and those that were more quote-unquote innovative. Those that were looking for new approaches. Those that were doing things that were different than had been standard in the world of Hungary. And they wanted to break off. They wanted to separate. What was their raya that is worthwhile to separate? Where do we see that it's important to have a degree of division? So they looked no further than Avram with his interactions with Lot. That Avram and Lot were two people heading in very different directions. Avram as the Magen Avram. Avram as Avram Avinu. Lot in a very different place. Lot is going over to Sodom. Lot is going over to live a particular kind of lifestyle. And it becomes clear sometimes that Avram and Lot can't always live together. And then Avram and Lot, if Avram's going to be able to succeed, so sometimes that demands cutting connections. Sometimes it demands establishing differences. And to learn from Avram and Lot that what's going on is considered to be terrible. And we have to learn how to break and divide ourselves from that element of the community, again, the same way that Avram did from Lot. And that's the position there of al yamin v'al smol. They describe a smol very, very distant from Torah and mitzvos, a yamin that has strong values, and there are even some people in the middle not sure where to go. And those on the right are saying, we have to separate to establish our own government, and they actually lobby for this. Talmidei Chasam Sofer lobby those in control of Hungary for permission to set up a separate and distinct entity, so that they can have their own communal organizations, they can function independently, not to be viewed as one. Now, it happens to be, if you're looking at America, let's say where the majority of us are from, it's true in England also, but looking at America, so different groups have their own communal organization. let alone shul, but the OU for certain community, the aguda for other communities, that different communities have their people, even as far as their interaction with government, where they may work together sometime, but there are different organizations, not to say it wasn't hungry, but there are different organizations. And the Netziv gets involved in this. The Netziv gets involved in this. And when the Netziv gets involved, so what's fascinating is as follows. The Netziv, this is not going on near Volozhin. Volozhin has its own issues at that time, but the Netziv feels a need to respond to this in a tshuva, which is, again, absolutely fascinating. So many discussions are relevant. A person can speak about this tshuva for a very, very long time, for a very, very long time. But the Netziv discusses this in many ways. And he says as follows. Let's unpackage things a little bit. We spoke last week how the Netziv is very cautious of those that are quick to refer to those that worship the Ribbono Shel Olam differently as apikorsim. The Netziv is very cautious of those who keep Torah and mitzvos, but struggle in the realm of gemilas chasadim. The Netziv is aware of that phenomenon exists. We spoke about that last week in his Hakdamah Sefer Bereishis. There are people who are tzaddikim, who are chasidim, but interpersonally, they're too quick to sort of cut people off. They're too quick and too biting in their perception of other people. They have a very easy time responding to others and saying about others that they're apikorsim, they're mean, and let's get rid of them entirely. The Tziv says that was a fade in Bayis Sheni. The Tziv reiterates that not only in his Perush Al Torah, but the Tziv references that here in the Tshuva. He writes similarly in his commentary on the Gemara, Merom Eshadah, in Yuma Andav Tes. When the Gemara in Yuma says, Sinaschinim destroyed, second Beis HaMikdash, says the Tziv. Sinaschinim means this. It means saying anyone that doesn't worship their Ribbono Shel Olam exactly as I do, so they're a min and they're not bikores, and they're considered to be totally, totally terrible. Then the Tziv says, don't make the mistake as those in that article Machziki Hadat. Don't make the mistake of assuming that nowadays things are worse than they ever were. Like people do it sometimes. Like, oh my God, it's never been this bad. You know, like Achdus and Klal Yisrael, it's never been this bad. And you're like, that's not true. It's actually been much worse. Like, it hasn't come to murder. You know, people aren't burning each other. Like it's not that bad. You know, like from a historical perspective, like Achdus and Klal Yisrael. Could even be we're in a pretty good spot. Could even be that we're not so bad, like historically. And the Tziv points out, like, you think in the time of Yehoshua it was better, or, you know, whatever it was, than the time of now? I'm not sure that it's so weak. He says, that ki kena marich kosev. He says, ki lo kedoros hakadmonim hador hachayim manu. It's worse now than it used to be. Bedoros hakadmonim hakodmin lo hayu habeinu nimbisakana. In the olden days, the people in the middle, they weren't that much of a threat. They weren't that much of a risk. Says the Netziv, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? From the time that we entered into Eretz Yisrael, in the time of Yehoshua, we've had massive threats. Massive threats. And dividing things up is terrible. He wants to say, let's separate Avram and Lot. No way at all. And here's one of the most famous lines, I think, in all the writings of the Netziv. Dividing up Klal Yisrael. Minamarech Eitzazok Kasha Kecharvos Laguf Ha'uma V'Kiyuma. It is as difficult as a sword to the body of Klal Yisrael and its continued existence. That your decision to separate movements, your decision to separate, to have your own group there, is more severe. It's like a sword to the body of Klal Yisrael. He says, in Bayis Sheni and in now, it would have been a primary mistake, a major error. Why would it have been such a big error? He says, first of all, Klal Yisrael is compared to Afar Haaretz. We're compared to the sand. We're compared to the sand. Sand, if Klal Yisrael is going to withstand Gullus and all that is there, the more that we are spread out, the weaker that we are. On its own, a small little bit of sand spread on its own, he says, Anu Kvushim Begola, where we're here in Gullus, Pzuri Yisrael bin Umas Olam, we're separated all over the place. We're compared in Gullus. We're compared in exile to the dirt in this earth. And the Umos HaOlam are Nimshalu. The Sefer and Sefer Yeshaya, what are the knowledge compared? We're compared to little specks of sand. What are they compared to in Sefer Yeshaya? Lemayim Rabim Shotzim. Like a major sort of flow of water. Dangerous water just coming in massive amounts. Coming in that direction. The only way that sand can withstand water, the only way we have a chance of living, we have to get so integrated and so together, our nation, to become almost like a rock. And if we're like a rock, then we have a chance of withstanding Golos. Then we have a chance of being able to take things to root. But absent that, it has to be the Heif Ne'emar. You know what happens when you divide up into different groups? That rock, which would have been powerful enough to withstand the torrential rain, that river coming this direction, now as a result, says in Tziv, it breaks, it divides up, it falls apart, and suddenly it's not big enough. There's a small group here and a small group there, and the water comes in. You know what the water does? The water destroys everything. The water takes away all of that which is there. We're going to be lost entirely. Says Netziv, therefore, what is the response? There's always like those like the unity people. You know, it's like, why can't, you know, like the Beatles a little bit. You know, like, let's all get along. Like, it's all good. Just all get along. Let's just, why fight? You know, why go there? Just get along. It'll all be okay. The Netziv doesn't stop and say, like, let's just become one. Let's love each other. Netziv says, okay, so what is our move? So the Netziv says, our move is not to separate. Our move is to stay together. But he says, Ela imbanu l'chazek esadas bekirbenu. I think you're right, and there are problems. Aleinu l'hizbonin midoros harishonim. Netziv says, so what did they used to do in challenging situations like this? What did they do? What did Chizkiyahu HaMelech do? What did Yeshaya do? What did people do? Learn from Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Shedisrofefu amudev yuzu hadas b'mi achaz. In the days of Achaz, the people, the fundamentals of Yadis were falling apart. So Ma'asa, what did he do? He took a sword. He put it b'beis hamedrash. He put it in the base medrash. And he said, kol mi she'eno osek b'torah. Anyone that doesn't learn Torah, I think I'm a little bit, you know, strong sometimes in a WhatsApp group. You get Chizkiyahu up here, you know? That's already, exactly. Get Chizkiyahu up here. If it doesn't involve a sword, it isn't that intense. You know, like that's where he was. And says Netziv an amazing thing. So yeah, it's Torah which is going to change things. Uneducated, distant people, they are often a greater threat than those who are able to enter into a base medrash, to learn Torah properly. The Netziv is clear, you're not going to win over everyone. You won't win over the most extreme. You're not going to win over the leaders who have their, but a lot of people in the middle. It's a lot of people in the middle. And you can win over a lot of people in the middle by bringing them into, but by bringing them in, that's the direction. I'll give you a sports point. Rabinovich is here this week. He's actually one of the better, he's an amazing person. This is a fantastic art from years ago. It's from a Bill Simmons article. Hope that's okay to quote. When he used to write, now it's more like podcasts, I think. But as he's a fantastic writer. But Tom Coughlin, who's the coach of the New York Giants, pointed something out, which was such a sharp insight as far as leadership in organizations. It's an amazing ha'ara. So in every team, take a football team, for example, and it's the same mashal here. Again, this one's not as appropriate, I think, but it's for a different time. But in Bill Simmons quoted Tom Coughlin following ha'ara. In every team, there are usually three kinds of people when you're a coach. There's people that are with you no matter what. They are on the team. They're there entirely, and they're just with you. You sometimes have category C. Category C are those people that are really not with you at all. There's a certain distance. This is like, you know, for the sports fans, there's who to think about nowadays, you know, who's sort of like not really with the team at all. You know, the starting center can't mention his name, neither will I. Who's off on the side and doing his own thing. Then you have the middle. The middle people are often not exactly sure what to do. The middle people are often, they're not fully with the program. They're not your real hardcore guys. But they see, and they're sort of somewhere wavering there in the middle. What a lot of people do, I think, if I remember correctly, I think with Tom, he was a coach of Giants, right? That's the right thing. I think what they used to do, which was a profound error, is you spend too much of your time dealing with category C. You spend too much of your time focusing on the small minority, which are the people who are struggling most. That's where the mistake really happens. That's the mistake which happens educationally with organizations sometimes. You know, you spend too much of your time with a very small group, And what happens then is that you aren't using your energy where it's really supposed to be used, and you're not talking about the masses and winning them over. And sometimes, instead of focusing too much on category C, focus on category B. A, you have. Let's focus on bringing category B. And you know what happens? If B comes to category A, if they're all with you, so then C sometimes makes a choice. And they're even more likely sometimes to be able to come over a little bit, but not too much of energy. The Netziv sort of preempted, or Netziv predated that Ha'ara by noting that about the Jewish people. You have the ones who are totally with you, and you have your ones who are a little bit more in the middle, not really sure, and you have your category, and you have your category C. Says Netziv, there are people that the below suffix, he said, Esek HaTorah B'kibetz Bali Batim, you have these people who are good people. Yegorim L'mai Machlokas B'Yisrael, it'll weaken Machlokas, U'leharbos Machziki Hadas, and it'll strengthen Machziki Hadas. That was the name of the magazine, he's using it here. It'll strengthen those who are really going to be Machzik from world. The below suffix is harbeish lo egi live up at tam rabbeinu harbeishon rabbeinu shulchan aruch. They're not like kicking the shulchan aruch, like kicking that. They're apathetic. They're there in the middle. Mikomaka hu meruchak milimet haTorah. Teach those people Torah. Teach those people Torah. Miyasa askim a Torah. They'll see that it'll totally be different. It'll totally be different. That, and you'll see these people aren't apikorsim. You'll be able to bring them there, but focus on that middle category, not on that third category. This leads the Netziv into an amazing point. You wanted to talk about Talmud Torah Shelo Lishma. So the Gemara has discussed about Talmud Torah Shelo Lishma. The Gemara in Brachos and Daf Yizayin, if he's been very harsh terminology, learning Torah Shelo Lishma, Noach Lo, would have been better not be created to learn Torah Shelo Lishma. The Gemara in Pesachim speaks of Talmud Torah Shelo Lishma in a more positive way. Vito Shelo Lishma, Bal Lishma. Talmud Shelo Lishma, Bal Lishma, like we may saw in the Gemara in Nazir also in Daf Gemma. When Chizkiyah HaMelech walked into the Beis Medrash, imagine the scene. And take it even as follows. Forget a sword in the Beis Medrash. But a guy gets up and he says as follows. Anybody that doesn't come to Shir on Friday, you're out of the yeshiva. It's not death with a sword, but you're out of the yeshiva. So suddenly what you see is that attendance, which is strong, suddenly, you know, it ups the level. It ups the level a little bit. It ups the level. Okay? It ups the level. Those guys that come, you'd call that Talmud Torah Lishma or Talmud Torah Shelo Lishma. The Chizkiyahu HaMelech, my son, the sword in the Beis Medrash. When they come, they're coming because I realize that Talmud Torah is a wonderful opportunity for Dveikus. I think I want to learn to understand the Sugya as well as possible, to develop my relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. I think I want to come because then I'll really know how to keep Torah Mitzvahs really, really well. No, they're coming Shelo Lishma. They're coming Shelo Lishma. So what the Netziv does in this tshuva in a very, very beautiful way is the Netziv points out, as Tosfos points out, but there are tiers of Talmud Torah Shelo Lishma. And because there are tiers of Talmud Torah Shelo Lishma, even there are forms of Talmud Torah Shelo Lishma which are good and which are fine. Ideally, Lishma is great, but a guy who comes in Talmud Torah Shelo Lishma, so it's okay. It's okay to start learning Shelo Lishma. Maybe I want to learn because I enjoy having people stand up for me when I walk in a room. Full disclosure, there are better pleasures in life. Just in case anyone was like, you know, that guy you up in the morning, it ain't that good. But there's a person does it for kavod. A person does it because they're scared of not coming and the accountability and the consequences which are going to emerge as a result. All of those things, says the Netziv, all of those things are not, it's fine. If it brings a person, it's fine. Do you know what happens? Chaim Volozhner writes, it's a diak in the Gemara. The Gemara says, La'olam, you should be osik in Torah Shloshma, don't Shloshma Balashma. What do you mean, La'olam? Would it have been better if I was learning Shloshma? It's often a necessary step in the process. It takes time to develop a relationship. It's not to fall in love with learning. So a little bit of Shloshma, it's always almost a necessary step in the beginning. And that's fine to bring people in that way. The Tziv argues, that's what we should be doing. Teach Talmud Torah. Start a massive start, Yimei'iyun. Go out there and start teaching a little bit. That's how we do it. It says in the Tziv earlier in the Tshuva, there are those people who are so holy. There are those people who are so great that they're removed from the world and they can't do it. There are people like that. They can't do it. But the model of the Avos in many ways, look at a figure that looks like Avma Avinu, HaNefesh Asher Asu Becharav, he references the Chasam Sofer in a very famous discussion. V'yahat l'reha kamocha zek klal gadol b'Torah. That specifically in Torah, v'yahat l'reha kamocha, supporting other people. And the famous comment, he's quoted of the Hafla, with Pinchas Horowitz, that a person who teaches Torah should be like a malach. A malach has one shlichas, it's focused on the person that's receiving Torah. But they themselves don't grow the same way. A malach is stagnant, but says the hafla. But if you teach Torah, and if you yourself are focused on others,
and it impinges on your growth on some level, the Ribbono Shel Olam rewards you and you will grow. But to be the kind of people who can interact with others, that's what like Rav Shapta jokes sometimes, and it's seen and believed in centrist orthodoxy. Not right, not left. Describe it beautifully. Being in the center, a person who's so firm, who can interact. You know, that's what it is in a certain sense. That's a mitzvah. Al yamin ve'al smol. That's what it is. Those kinds of people can have an influence, can have an impact. And that's a kedusha, which is there, who can be marbitz Torah, who can teach and give over to others. For nitziv, that becomes so important to develop that kind of asek in Torah. He says, HaKlal im be'emes v'tom anubam ha'atak adas. Ein etza kim la'asok b'limin ha'Torah. Our only etza is Talmud Torah. B'li shum nafkamina im hu l'shma o shalo l'shma. B'zeh enu el ha'masol l'leva yodil l'karsh baruch hu. That's your bonus on the schedule, Mr. Marshall. Our job is to teach. Of Alanu, Ein Ladath, Vlasso, Vazem, Uma, Uvazeha, Ofen, Yirbulom, the Torah, Ken, Vakena, then you'll be able to keep more and more Torah. At some point, the Nitziv in here takes a knock at Chassidim, the Nitziv, knocks in the world of Torah, Chassidus. He does sometimes, he says, you know what? If people really learn, what else is going to happen? So then he says, you know, people are going to start keeping what it says in Shulchan Aruch instead of what some holy person told them to do. You know, he has a little bit of like a knock at some of the Chassidim. The Rebbe told me that, you know, feels terrible, things like that, but feels sweet, I can have whatever I want. Says Nitziv, it's good to learn, you know, and it'll be okay. Okay, that's what he is.
Fine.
But everyone has their, you know, it is what it is. Okay. Here's the machlokas. You ready? Who is the Nitziv talking about? Who are the two groups that they were thinking about splitting? Who is he encouraging we teach Torah to? Who is he encouraging that we work with? Who is he talking about? The implications are massive. If he's talking about real reform Jews the whole time, so it looks like he's saying that there, some of them have wonderful intentions, they're not really apikorsim, we really should be working with them entirely, we should really be integrated with them. At minimum, the Nitziv becomes a model of someone that would say, we should have a degree of real interaction with these people. Look as an example at Rav Melamed. Rav Melamed, you don't have it on the sheet, so I'll just read it. HaNitziv mivolach. This is Rav Melamed wrote a couple of articles defending his interaction in that way with that rabbi. He says, HaNitziv mivolach nishal. Him nachon lahafra es hakehilos. We divide up denominations in Yadus. The ofen sheyiri Hashem yifredu mehareformim. Kadesha lo yishbu mehan. To separate the reform from Jews. Should we separate or not? Like Avram did from Lot. And Sif says, no, it's like a sword. L'guf ha'uma v'kiyuma. Says Kolomar, says Rav Lamed, me'evra l'kashi asura, yesh basikun l'kiyim ha'uma. It's a dangerous thing to do, and don't do it at all. Says Rav Lamed, I'm a follower of the Tziv. Rav Cook's a Talmud of the Tziv. I come from the world of Rav Cook. That's why I'm Mamasur. This is what it's all about. It's what it's all about. They made up this new Isser called you can't be with a reformed person. Where's that Isser from? I don't know that Isser anywhere. That is from, I'm aware. The Tziv sword is even greater than this. It's like Hana to the future of Klal Yisrael. It's like a sword to the goof of Klal Yisrael. So writes Rav Melamed based on the Tziv.
Not bad.
Presence, he right. But I think the answer to the question is I'm not talking about whether he should be with her or not. Different question for a different time. Whether he's right about his interpretation of the Nitziv, I think is actually pretty clear. The answer is no. Why is he not right? So let's unpackage things a little bit. Who was splitting from who in Hungary? Who was splitting from who? Who was the subject of the article? What was really happening? It was in Hungary. It was the Chasam Sofer Chevra. Who were they splitting from? So this is an academic ha'ara, and then we'll get to into another shuva.
Rabbi Shua Shapira points this out a little bit also, the Rashi Rav Magan, his Kuntris. He put it out, like, not the long after Ramlam, like a 40-foot-big Kuntris. It happens to be, it's very, very nice.
But Rabbi Dr. Gil Pearl, one of the experts in the Tziv, points out in a footnote in an article. You ready? It's an amazing thing. There's a guy named Rabbi Howard Joseph, his rabbi in Montreal, who wrote an article all about how the Tziv is, like, really open. Based on the Tziv, we should be open to different denominations and things like that. Says Gil Pearl as follows. Howard Joseph seems to have misread the most critical distinction in the Tziv's essay. The Hungarian ultra-Orthodox community was calling for separation from Neolog and non-Orthodox, and neo-Orthodox Jews, not from the Reform or historical positive movements of Germany. How's this one? The whole conversation had nothing to do with Reform. Why nothing to do with Reform? Because it was Hungary. Reform wasn't a threat. Reform was nothing in Hungary at that time. That's not who they were referring to. What were they referring to? What was called Neolog Jews or Neo-Orthodox Jews. What was that referring to? People that were presumably, it seemed like, at least in the initial stages, still keeping Shulchan Aruch, But they made lots of changes.
Changes about where the bima was going to be located.
Changes about how the chazan was going to dress in daven. Changes about how they were going to speak in the vernacular, in the language that they spoke. I don't know what it was in Pressburg. I apologize. Hungarian, I would guess. I don't know. As opposed to speaking in Yiddish, that the tone was going to be a little bit different. That they were doing things to make it look, they're taking out certain parts of daven, nothing as far as ideology, nothing as far as Shulchan Aruch, at least in the beginning of stages. That was, in many ways, the initial discussion here that Nitziv is taking part in. He's not taking part in the discussion at all about reform. Not reform. The latter reform posed little direct threat to them in Eastern Hungary. Their differences were so blatant as to make the call for separation unnecessary. You don't call separation when you're the Chasam Sofer. Imagine you would get up nowadays, the Erloi Rebbe, you know, the flowers of Chasam Sofer get up and they say, I think we have to be separate from reform. What about your life is not separate from reform? You know what I'm saying? It's like me getting up and saying, like, I really think Shalavim and Shalavim for women, like, we really should be a separate boys and girls program. I think we shouldn't be co-ed. And you're like, okay. You know, like, what are you like? We aren't co-ed. We're in different locations. One in Yerushalayim, one's in Shalavim. Like, what are you talking? There was no fight about that. The fight was within the from world, and that's why the Nitziv talks about people who are good intention, who worship Rabbono Shalom different than you, but are an apikorsim. The Nitziv isn't saying that no one's an apikores. The Nitziv is saying that those people aren't so quick to refer to them as apikores. He points out that when Rabbi Howard Joseph translated the Nitziv's tshuva, he misinterpreted. The Nitziv calls certain people great and holy who think that they can, like, worship God, but defend the Shulchan Aruch. The great and holy person that Rabbi Howard Joseph thought they were referring to, reform. The Gil points out, it wasn't referring to reform, it's referring to Chesisha Rebbe there. The great and holy, that thing you have to keep all of, it was a subtle knock of the Nitziv on them, like he had the other place in his writing. That's what was going on there. How do I know that the Nitziv expressed certain reservations about interactions with non-Frum Jews? Because he has a tshuva, a different tshuva, in Meshiv Da'avar, like Aleph Simon Tef. The Nitziv's tshuva here was about the following question. It was a question about merging together with a place called Beis Yaakov. This Beis Yaakov is different than the Beis Yaakov that we are familiar with. Why? Because Nitziv says that the Mechal Shabbos is good for Hesya. You can have your issues and you can reflect upon Beis Yaakov Chinuch as much as you want. It is not a Mechal Shabbos good for Hesya kind of a zone. It just isn't. It isn't. But apparently, if you're hanging out in near the Nitziv, you know, there was a group like that. So he said, Aldach let starif im ha-mechonim, ma-mechonim b'shem Beis Yaakov. There was a people who wanted to join with the Beis Yaakov chevra a little bit, you know? Okay. V'heim ha-mechalim as ha-shavit v'rehesi ha-chalila. Says Nitziv, chalil ischaber imaim b'shem davar ha-shayach la-vores Hashem. Says Nitziv, you can't have any interactions with them with things that relate to avodas Hashem. But doesn't it say in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Din Hei, Sipachim Yid Aleph, that a person who violates an avera, you can maybe still count them sometimes for a minion or things like that. And we still are Mekabel, Karbanos, and Poshe Yisrael. Says Nitziv, no. There's a difference. These people are in a different category. These people already, Afil B'dieved, Lo Yatza, Yidei Tefila, this would be a totally different category. And says Nitziv, quoting a pasuk and say for Mishlei, that when it comes to certain people who are off a little bit, Al Telech Baderech Itam, pasuk says, don't walk in the same path as them, and avoid, keep your feet entirely away from their path. Says Nitziv, there are two kinds of interactions you have to have. There are interactions that a person has in business. No one's saying, says Nitziv, that you have to, in business, only do business with from Jews. No one's saying that if you go to a store and you want to buy a drink, you say, not what's your kosher in the store, but can I please check your tzitzis? No one has to feel pressure to borrow, you know? That there's no need, says the Nitziv, that's not what we're saying. And no one's saying, as he wrote in his Akdama to say for Bracious, that the Avos couldn't interact with Ovdei Ililim and in a nice and classy way. But in topics of Korah Vodas Hashem, separation. You can't combine, says Nitziv. But Derech HaMizchar Shederech HaRabim, of course you can interact with them. But on the Siba Miuchedah Shalhem, Haino based Tfila Shalhem, Uchedome, Minar Raglicha Mamish, don't go anywhere near there in that way. Basically, Zara Harbei, be very, very careful about it. So, Rav Shapira, the Nitziv never embraced getting together with Reform. The Nitziv's view was, within the spectrum of the firm world, we have to be broad. We have to not say my way is the only way of doing things. We have to be very open. We have to be classy. We have to be nice with a wide range of people. We have to interact in business dealings, maybe even discussion about larger communal affairs at times. But to have discussions about real avodas Hashem in that way, there's supposed to be separation. The Netziv was never arguing for that in any real way. That's really where the line is different. The line is different. That's what's not so clear, where exactly you are magdir different things. So for the Netziv, what you have is the Netziv in his tshuva is so chashev, but the question is, what's he talking about? And where is he going? And who's he referring to? And what does he say? And what does he say? And says Rabbi Yeshua Shapira as follows. Rabbi Yeshua Shapira follows. We're not talking about, we don't use Harif Lashon. We're not going for speaking in a certain way. But we have to understand what the Netziv was teaching. He was saying, take the people who are in the middle and try to teach them Torah. Try to makara them. Try to bring them closer. But that's what, in many ways, it's all about. I'll end with a Maisa, and then I'll share that one afterwards, which I think is interesting. But it's an important, I think, addendum to all of this. Got a lot of fascinating Torah on the Netziv. But again, Rav Melamed, we'll talk about it a different time. I think as far as the Netziv goes, I'm not sure I think it was probably a little more complicated. Rav Lichtenstein once shared a Maisa that's a very, very beautiful Maisa, and he added on a Ha'ara, which I think is so interesting and so important for us to remember. 1935, Salvecha comes to Eretz Yisrael, his only trip to Eretz Yisrael. The Rav is trying to audition, I guess you would say, in a certain sense, to become, he's trying out to become the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, an election which he happens to have lost to Moshe Avigdor Amiel, a very chashuv Talmid Chacham. The Rav lost, the Rav went around. When he was there in 1935, the Rav, Rav Lichtenstein says, visited a kibbutz in the Kinneret. They offered the Rav some fruit, which the Rav naturally declined. The kibbutz understood that the reason why the Rav was saying no to the fruit was likely because of shayles about kashrus. In Eretz Yisrael, there are questions about orla, questions about tevel, chumos, maizos, etc. They understood the reason why the Rav was not eating was because of questions about kashrus. Whereupon the person who offered the food told him, even though we are a secular kibbutz, our chadar ochel, our cafeteria, is entirely kosher. Why was it entirely kosher? He said that Rav Kook once spent a Shabbos in that kibbutz. It's a famous Maisa. Rav Kook spent a Shabbos in that kibbutz. Rav Kook naturally brought his own food because they didn't have a kosher kitchen. He ate with them at each Seuda, including participating Moti Shabbos out of some sort of a kumzitz. At the end of Shabbos, Rav Kook said to them, after offering them a very gracious thank you, he said, I hope that next time we're able to eat together. I hope that next time we're able to eat the same food. Sure enough, the kibbutz had a vote, and the kibbutz there, in that vote, the kibbutz voted that they were going to institute kashrus in the public, in the chadar ochel. Lichtenstein said, I'm not so naive to believe that there are that many Rav Kooks out there. I don't believe that even Rav Kook with his forced personality could have gone to every single secular kibbutz and convinced him to do it. Nor should we take away from the impressive nature of the members of those kibbutz to respond to Rav Kook in that way. Said Lichtenstein as follows, though. Even if you argue that at times there has to be separation, and we're trying to argue that there's a bit of a machlokes in how you learn the Netziv, but the nature of that separation, the Netziv still understood the importance, we spoke about last week, of being nice and classy to everyone, of in business and the like, but as far as certain issues of frumkeit, being able to have clear lines and maybe even clearly. But this was the following. Many of us would have been comfortable, you know, if you go to that kibbutz, okay, it is what it is, and you move on. How many would have felt and expressed Rav Kook's pain, and how deeply? Would we truly yearn for that next time, consumed by candid regret that it seems to be constantly becoming increasingly remote? And to what extent sometimes when a person says no and a person has a degree of separation, do they feel pain about that separation, not triumph of we won? To what extent is there a feeling of I wish that we could bring closer as opposed to a little bit more of a separation? These questions are complex and the questions are real. Where you do and don't, you know, hold the line becomes something incredibly complicated. But then it's his legacy, what he stood for is certainly very important.